I'm your father.
Welcome to Dadawan. I'm Tony Nunes.
And I'm Rick Ribello.
And we are back after quite a long hiatus. I'm glad to say that Dadawan is officially back. And this is as good a time as any because Rogue One is now in theaters. We're a little late to the game with our review, but that's what we're doing this week. We're reviewing the newest Star Wars movie, the first Star Wars spin-off movie, Rogue One. We hope you had a great new year. And we look forward to catching up with a few episodes about, you know, what's happening this year in Star Wars. Because as this movie points out, there's a lot going on in Star Wars. There's a lot of new stuff coming out and a lot of tie-ins that I didn't expect. I don't know about you. But we'll dive all into all of that, as well as some of the controversy to come from Rogue One. Because there's, I don't even know if it's controversy. There's just some griping about some things. That I think will be fun to talk about. So yep. Where should we begin? Let's obviously the caveat, if you haven't seen Rogue One, there's spoilers. But if you haven't seen Rogue One and you're listening to this, then I don't know what's your deal.
It's been 3 weeks. If you haven't seen Rogue One, you're not going to see Rogue One.
And you're listening to a Star Wars podcast. So
yeah.
I'm sure you've seen it.
Well, first off, I want to say I did like the movie, and you know, I'm a fan of Red Letter Media, and they were very hard on the movie. And I'm just wondering if the Star Wars movies, as much as, you know, we can all agree the prequels were not very good, I'm wondering if people are just being too hard on these movies now, or if they're expecting too much, or what the deal is. I'm just not sure, because granted, this movie had flaws. You know, it's a great movie, it's an enjoyable movie, but it did have some flaws. And I didn't think they were flaws that were, you know, destroyed the movie or made the movie not good. So I don't know. What do you think, Tony?
No, I think I the flaws, I'm sure that we're going to talk about the same flaws. But they're not flaws in the way that it took me out of the movie, me personally.
No.
I know some people it did. I really like this. I think for... This movie is a big deal because this is kind of the testing ground for Lucasfilm and Disney and what their big master plan is for Star Wars, doing the trilogy stories every other year and filling in the gaps with these Star Wars story side universe stories. So you know, this was a gamble in a way, not a gamble in the sense that it could have failed, because it is Star Wars and it's coming off the back of Force Awakens, which is, you know, a phenomenon. But this movie definitely didn't disappoint me. I really liked it. I put it in my top 10 list for the year. It's really a great Star Wars movie. My biggest gripe, and you know, this is coming from the point of view of a parent, is that it lacked some of the magic that we've got in the other Star Wars films. You know, they hint around the Force and things like that here. So I don't know if it's the lack of the Force or what, but that Star Wars magic that kind of makes it really accessible for kids, some of that was not on display in this movie, in my opinion. You know what I mean?
No, I agree, and I think it was part of the whole being darker thing.
Yeah.
You know, I think when you're being a little bit darker, and I think what they were doing is they got kind of caught up a little bit in the Christopher Nolan concept of it's got to be so earnest and like ground in reality.
Yep. But it also doesn't do what DC does. It finds a nice balance between...
It doesn't go completely overboard.
It doesn't. But I think, you know, from the point of view of a 7-year-old, I think this movie is a little too heavy-handed for a 7-year-old. The Force Awakens, I mean, that movie is perfect for a 7-year-old. But it's so I think that this movie is a little less universal in that respect.
Well, I think, you know, a lot of people, you know, the complaints is that it was a lot of fan service in the film. There's an enormous amount of fan service in the film. And the question is the film geared towards guys my age who are 42, 43, lifelong Star Wars fans, or is it geared towards kids? This one is geared, The Force Awakens was geared more towards kids and a new generation of people. This is geared more towards people who've been here for 40 years and watching Star Wars films, you know. But you know what? I thought about it and I said to myself, these Star Wars stories movies are like, you know when you have a favorite show, like Game of Thrones or Sopranos, and you know, they got a 10-episode season, and a couple of those episodes, they're just kind of like out of place.
Yeah,
this,
I do.
That's basically what this is. I mean, this is something that is not part of that continuity. And as far as that goes, I think it's very successful in doing that, because a lot of times when a show or a series goes outside of its standard continuity, it's usually either very boring or it doesn't make sense. And this, I thought, was perfect. I think it fit in very well. And,
it's an aside. This movie is an aside.
Yeah, it is an aside. You know, and a lot of people are like, well, you know, what do you mean you make an aside movie? And I know, going back to Red Letter Media, they were saying that this movie doesn't work without the context of the other movies. So they said, oh, well, if you had this movie without the other movies, it wouldn't make sense. And my thoughts were, yeah, but we do have the other movies, and we do know the context. So I don't understand. And everybody was freaked out about where it fits on the timeline. It's like, everybody needs to calm down.
Yeah, I mean, as far as watching this movie without... If you're going into Star Wars and you start with Rogue One, I still think that it could hold on as a singular movie. I just think there's little pieces here and there that you're going to be a little confused by. But I do think this could, you know, as far as genre goes, obviously all the Star Wars films are science fiction, but this one is playing with genre in an interesting way, because you have aspects of samurai films in this. But more than that, you have aspects of war movies. This is essentially, you know, the Star Wars war movie. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a battle movie. So I think from that regard, I think this movie could stand on its own. I really do. I think some of the little nods to the other movies and other characters, and the ending especially, I think some of those things kind of take away from it being a singular movie. So first of all, this movie, basically, you know what's going to happen. I don't want to say this movie is this the existence of this movie is pointless, but in some ways it is pointless, you know what I mean? It's a story that didn't necessarily need to be told. It doesn't deepen the lore or anything in a way that I find super meaningful.
But you know, my argument for that, because I've heard that a lot.
Yeah.
You know, there's a million World War II movies out there, and people keep making World War II movies.
Yeah.
And last time I checked, we know how that ends.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, people come up to me like, oh, this is garbage. We know how it ends. And I'm like, well, I know how the Dirty Dozen ends, and I know how, what was the Quentin Tarantino World War II movie? Glorious Bastards. I know how that ends.
Yeah,
I know how Midway ends. It doesn't ruin it for me.
No, it stands on its own as a war movie.
Right. It's like there's nothing wrong with telling a story where people know what's going to happen, as long as it's a good story.
I think the problem that people have is that we are so used to that core storyline.
You know,
we've had some expanded universe books that stray away from the storyline and really have nothing to do with that core storyline, but it's never been brought to the movies. So I can understand why people would, even though Disney's been open about what this is from the start. There's never any doubt that this was the kind of movie that we were going to get. I knew it. Their marketing was clear. Their vision is clear. But I think a lot of people, especially coming after last year and The Force Awakens, which The Force Awakens kind of reinvigorated the enthusiasm behind Star Wars, not just for a new generation, but for all generations. You know, it renewed interest in Star Wars in a big way. And I think people love these new characters. So I think for some people, it's a little bit of a letdown coming off of Force Awakens to go to Rogue One. Just because, you know, they're not fully understanding what they were going to get.
Yeah. Well, like I said, it's like a, you know, your favorite TV show, and they have an episode that, you know, goes past the normal storyline, and everybody gets upset because they're like, I tuned in this week, and they didn't follow up on the story.
Which Walking Dead does all the time.
All the time, right? Because you're expecting...
And it's frustrating. It's frustrating. Yeah. But, like I said, they were completely clear about what this is. I just think a lot of people missed that point.
Oh, I do.
But it made a lot of money. It's well reviewed. This movie's not a failure by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
There are core little groups of fans complaining about it, and I hear their complaints, but I don't think that they're warranted in this case.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the one thing we're gonna get to it sooner or later, but you know, I was not a fan of the Peter Cushing reenactment, or what, I don't know what, I don't know what anybody wants to call resurrection. I wasn't a big fan of it.
Yeah, this is a huge issue.
I thought that if they had done a taste of it, it would have been fine. But they just did way too much of it. Like, there was just a whole in-your-face amount of Peter Cushing in this movie.
And not just Peter Cushing, but Carrie Fisher, young Carrie Fisher at the end, too.
Well, the funny thing is that Carrie Fisher looked horrible. She looked like one of the wax things at Madame Tussauds. I don't know what happened there with that CGI, but...
Yeah, and you know, it's tragic that she passed away last week.
Yes. Oh, yes, it did.
You know, it's very tragic. And not just because she played Princess Leia, because she's done, you know, Carrie Fisher, the person, has done a tremendous amount of work in film and in writing and for the mental health community. But that said, I was watching Wishful Drinking, which is her one-woman show that's on HBO. I rewatched that this week. And there's a whole section by the way, Wishful Drinking, if you have HBO, you should go watch it because it's absolutely fantastic. It will give you a new respect and bigger weight to the loss of Carrie Fisher. But back to my point, there's a whole section where she's talking about George Lucas owning her likeness. And it's funny when she's saying it, but it's kind of dark and creepy in a way, because it's true. You know, Lucasfilm does own that likeness of her. And I don't know the legality of this, but I'm really interested. I really kind of want to do some research into this and see what the deal is. You know, what a studio can and can't do with someone's likeness, because they're basically taking a performance that they've done and re-manipulating that performance to be a new performance digitally. And first of all, it looks awful. You know, it's, what is it called? The Uncanny Valley is really on display. But even more so, it just creeps me out that studios have the right to do that.
I mean, that's one thing. And I think the other thing they're guilty of is when George Lucas did the prequels, he was convinced that the CGI in those movies was unbelievable. That it was photorealistic. And he was wrong.
He was.
And we go back now and we look at them, and they don't even look kind of bad. They look horrible.
Yeah, but also at the same time...
Embarrassingly bad.
At the same time, think to Lord of the Rings, when you first saw Lord of the Rings. Gollum looked amazing. But if you go back and watch Lord of the Rings now, Gollum doesn't look quite right. He doesn't mesh.
Yeah, that's my point. So with this, I'm saying is... When they did this, you know, they were probably giving each other high fives in the edit suite when they saw this digitization and saying, oh, my God, we nailed it. You know, this, it's perfect. And, you know, it's one of those things where they're going to look back at it not even 10 years from now, 5 years from now, and go, oh, man.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, that looks like, you know, Kevin Spacey in Call of Duty Modern Warfare.
Well, here's how I would have
written it. Doesn't even look that good.
No, I would have written it. in a way that Peter Cushing's character, you know, Tarkin comes back through hologram. You know, he talks through hologram.
Yeah, because you can mask it with that.
You can mask it because it's a hologram. It, you know, you can add all kinds of frequency effects and things like that. Yeah. I think they should have, written his part so he wasn't present at that time in that place.
I don't know why they needed that character. Why do they need that character?
Well, they do need that character, I think.
They need him, but they didn't need him that much.
I don't think they need him to be present on the Death Star at that time. I think they could have worked around that. And then as far as the Carrie Fisher thing at the end, it kind of bothers me when movies wrap everything up at the end. Episode 3 did this too, where it ties everything together. So, oh, look, now we're putting a bow on it and connecting it to the next movie.
Yeah, we're dropping Luke off at...
It's like, we get it. We know what happens. I find when they do stuff like that, it's a disrespect to the audience because we're not stupid. We've seen these movies. We love these movies. We know what happens. We know how they tie in. You don't have to show it to us.
Yeah. Well, you know, they seemed obsessed with that. And like I said, a lot of people were complaining about, you know, too much fan service. And I'm like,
you know what?
But, you know, I don't want to focus on just the bad
stuff. No, I know. It's easier to talk about the bad always in any situation. Yeah. But, you know, we're getting that stuff out of the way. You know, especially the CGI bringing people back thing. You know, that's been a big debate since this movie came out. And it's, you know, for anybody who has a question or is interested in that, I tell you, go watch the movie The Congress. Because that's what that movie is about. It's about Robin Wright Penn giving up her likeness to the studios in the near future, and it's an amazing movie. But you know, it's amazing fiction, but that movie really makes me think that we're not far off from that being the case.
It's almost hysterical that that movie comes out and like 2 years later, we're having this debate. You know what I mean? It didn't take 5 or 10 years. It literally took 2 years, and now we're having this debate. So
yeah, it's insane. But you know what? It's not just Star Wars that's doing this. It's kind of rampant all over the place.
Well, it started, you know, Civil War with Robert Downey Jr., which actually I thought looked amazing. I thought it was shockingly good when they made Robert Downey Jr. look young.
Well, they did it in Westworld, too, with Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah, and even then, it looked a lot better than
it did look good. But you know what? This whole thing really started with commercials. There's I think it was Dirt Devil did that commercial with Gene Kelly, where they recut his dance scenes with him vacuuming. And then you have Marilyn Monroe and Snickers commercials now and things like that. Mm-hmm. So it's a whole debate. I really would love to do some research, and I might in the near future, into, you know, what rights do actors have to their likeness. It's a
and
whole new world.
Don't forget Tron Legacy too.
And that didn't look very good.
It looked strange. And they did it with the Terminator movies with Schwarzenegger as well.
Yep, they kind of looked glowy.
With the Terminator movies, they used it sparingly. I thought, you know, they didn't have the character talking as much, so it wasn't so bad.
Yeah.
But I don't know. They seem in love with this stuff. It just seems like Hollywood is just so in love with these. I don't know why. I don't know why they have. It's like a football team that doesn't have faith in its defense.
Well, they understand that people love nostalgia, so they're just going about it all wrong.
Yeah, but it's not real nostalgia, though.
It's not nostalgia. Who's nostalgic for Tarkin? I mean, Tarkin's a great character, but who's going to say, oh, that movie sucked because it needed more Tarkin?
Yeah. Well, not even that. It's like, you know, I can give you a Kenner action figure, okay, from 1977, or I could give you one that looks exactly like it, but it's a reproduction from now, and the reproduction, you'll be like, eh. Because in your heart, you know it's not the same thing from 1977. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're like, oh, this is just something they threw together now, so I really don't care.
Well, it's all watering down. Everything's being watered down.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, that's the thing. And, you know, But I don't want to waste all our time on this,
no,
though.
Let's talk about the bad.
Let's just agree it was a bad thing.
Yes, there were a couple things about this movie that were bad, but
yeah,
it is by no means a bad movie. It's a fantastic movie.
The only other thing, you know, it's funny, when I came out of it, I said, this is a movie that actually needed more movie. Like, this movie actually needed a couple of movies to tell this story. And because a lot of people complain that there was not enough character buildup with the main characters. And I agree, but unlike what other people were saying, everybody was just like, oh, that's just bad writing. I'm like, no, it's not bad writing. There wasn't enough time to do that construction.
I thought they did well with the character buildup.
I think they did okay.
I think there's more emotional resonance with some of these characters than I've seen in recent, you know, Force Awakens aside.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's more emotional resonance than I've seen with characters in recent history. And we need that.
You know, it's, you know, a lot of people said that they wish that they had seen a movie just with Chirrut Imwe and Baze Balbus, which I agree. And a lot of people complain that Jyn Erso and Cassian Andor really didn't have a relationship, like they had no chemistry. And I agree with that, too. I don't think that,
no, they didn't,
that
have Jyn
and Cassio had any chemistry at all. But, I mean, Donnie Yen is the best Jedi we've seen in 8 movies. You know, for some reason, Star Wars kills off all their best Jedis and Sith in one movie, and I don't know why.
Well, when they first started talking about this, this Star Wars story project that they're doing now, one of the things that they were talking about was a kind of a Seven Samurai type movie, which obviously this is what it ended up being. But I still would have loved to see just that kind of
I think they shot that movie and they got rid of it all.
They may have.
I think one of the other big controversies we need to talk about
rewrites
is that all the footage in the original trailer didn't make it into the movie.
Yeah, there's clearly some rewrites.
Yeah, I mean, all of the footage in the original trailer is not in this movie. All of it.
Yeah.
You know, there's footage of them running on the beach with the hard drive, which never happens in this movie. They never leave that tower with the hard drive. You know, there's obviously the dialogue with her saying, I'm a rebel, I rebel, and all that stuff. That wasn't in the movie. You know, there was a whole other movie that was shot that we didn't get to see. And you have to wonder why.
Yeah, yeah. But you know what? Whether that movie was better than this one remains to be seen. But
yeah.
But this, I mean, this, as an action movie, if you look at this from the lens of an action movie,
right,
this was a fantastic action movie.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, this was the first Star Wars movie not to have John Williams score. It was Michael Giacchino.
I didn't think it was that hot.
I liked it. I really dug it because he had little notes from John Williams' score in there, but it was its own at the same time. I dug it. I thought it was really good. Yeah. Because in my mind, this is an action movie. It's an action war movie. So I think that the notes don't have to be as epic. They just have to be kind of relenting. And you got that. The pacing of this movie was great. I was not bored for a second of this movie.
No, me neither. I mean, it's an enjoyable film when you watch it. And I think a lot of people, like I said, one of the biggest problems for this film, because it's a Star Wars movie, if it was any other movie, people would have watched it, said they had a good time, they would have gone home and not thought about it. But because it's a Star Wars movie, everybody's got to go home, they have to think of every scene, everything that happened, they have to take it apart by piece, by piece, by piece, by piece. You know, a lot of films don't hold up that well when you do that. You know, it's pretty rough to look at every single aspect of the film as closely. I mean, and that's you know, Disney's problem is that they know that these films are going to be absolutely torn apart no matter what. I don't mean torn apart in a negative. I mean, people are going to dissect everything about them.
And what people forget is that I think the Star Wars franchise is so beloved. And me and you, we do this. We're doing it right now. But the franchise is so loved that people hold it so dear. Like, you know, these are my favorite movies, these Star Wars movies. Yeah. But, you know, when you stack it up to, like, Scorsese or things like that, it's popcorn cinema at its best, but it's not, it's not like deeply thoughtful cinematic brilliance, and it's not supposed to be. It's cinematic brilliance in a different way. It's cinematic brilliance for escapism, you know, but I think people look at it through the other lens as well, and it's just a movie that you can't look at like that, because it's not meant to be looked at like that. And I think, you know, people hold it so precious, hold Star Wars so precious, that, you know, they're just looking at it all wrong. And I think that's, you know, that's something that's grown over time, and that's become a problem. And that's why people are maybe criticizing what is essentially an excellent film and one of the better Star Wars films in recent years.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right, so let's talk about what we liked.
All right. I can tell you off the top of, you know, to start out, I always loved the robot characters. You know, droids are usually my favorite characters in the Star Wars movies. I thought K2SO was perfect.
Yeah.
I thought he fit perfectly into what I wanted. He was kind of like C-3PO if C-3PO was kind of a dick. And I liked that.
Somebody said it best that he's C-3PO's kind of angry older brother.
Yeah, yeah. It's perfect. Perfect. And, no, and plus, plus when KS or K2SO dies, I felt, you know, kind of sad about it.
Yeah, I was bummed out, yeah.
So when you feel sad about a droid dying, then you know that droid was written well in the screenplay. Mm-hmm. And you know, Alan Tudyk did a great job voicing him. So, that you know, that was probably my favorite part of the whole movie was K2SO.
No, I have to say Donnie Yen was my favorite part of the movie.
Yeah.
Because when I watched Donnie Yen, you know, it's funny. You look at him and you look at, my mind just went blank, the guy who played Darth Maul, Ray Park.
Yeah.
When you look at Donnie Yen and Ray Park's work, you say to yourself, man, those other Jedi battles look so terrible.
Yeah.
They're so ungraceful. It's like, part of me, you know, it's funny, because even, you know, George Lucas said that his inspiration for Star Wars, you know, came from Kurosawa and stuff like that. And you sit there and go, man, it's a shame they whitewashed those first movies so much, because they really could have used some Asian actors in those films, you know?
Yeah.
Certainly an Asian choreographer. I mean, fight choreographer. Because when you look at Donnie Yen and you look at, you know, you go back to the prequels as well, and you see the fighting in that, other than Ray Park, it looks horrible.
Yeah,
horrible.
It does.
You know? You can't watch the lightsaber battle in A New Hope and be like, that was really amazing. It was terrible.
They're pretty dull.
Oh, God. It could lacked any and all grace whatsoever. And you look at Donnie Yen and you go, that's what the Jedis were supposed to be like. And he's not even a Jedi, technically. But you sit there and go, I could see from the way he lives and moves and acts and walks that's the way they were supposed to be. You know, and he's not boring. You know, he's not doing the prequel thing where he's sitting on a pillow, you know, and just talking in very highfalutin.
Part of his not being boring is that he is not an actual Jedi by the sense that we know Jedis. He doesn't have crazy powers. He's not, you know, a Mary Sue in any way. He is a follower of Jedi as a religion. You know, he's one of the guardians of the wills. That built up the Jedi religion as a religion better than any Star Wars movie to date, because in the other Star Wars movies, all we see are Jedi and Jedi powers. They're so commonplace in the movies. It's kind of like watching a movie with, you know, 30 Jesuses. And it becomes not very special. So to see it in this light, in this movie, there's no Jedis.
Technically there is, because Vader's a Jedi.
Well, yes. But I mean, in this core group, there's no Jedi who's the leader. I found that really, really nice and a really great change for all the Star Wars movies, because we've never seen that. We've seen the Jedi Temple, but inside of it we have a bunch of kids and people who are actual Jedi and can do crazy stuff. So it's nice to see the followers and the people who go through the motions but are not Jedi. You know, they have the power within them, but it might not be that mystical power that we're used to. They're working harder to make things happen. I thought that was amazing. I thought that was a great feature of this movie.
Yeah, no, like I said, he was my favorite part of the film. And like a lot of people are saying, you know, they wish they could have just seen a film with, you know, Donnie Yen and Wang Zhang, you know, going off on their own. You know, how do they get together? Why are they together? You know, they seem like a very interesting couple of guys, you know?
Yeah.
And it's a shame. Yeah, there were a lot of good characters. It really is a shame that they're gone. You know, it's a shame they only got one movie. I think the only person I think who really got short shrift, well, a couple of people, was a Bodhi, played by Riz Ahmed. Like, you really never knew anything about him. It's like he was a Imperial pilot, which it was hard to believe, because you look at him and you go, he doesn't look like an Imperial. He looks a little dirty and sweaty to be an Imperial pilot, you know?
Yeah.
And I felt, I don't know what the heck happened with Forrest Whitaker's character, but I felt like there were scenes missing with him.
Well, you'll probably see them in Rebels, because Saw Gerrera is going to be on Star Wars Rebels now.
Right. But thing is, you can't, somebody said it best, where they're like, you can't keep telling people to have to go reference,
you know,
books and all kinds of third-party material to get the whole story. That's not the way cinema works. But I felt like there was supposed to be a scene with him, like, training Jyn Erso or doing something with Jyn Erso. They you know, he finds her in the hole, and he's like, I'm going to take care of you. And then it just cuts to the future. We needed some sort of flashback with them working together, I felt. Because when he dies, you know, when he gets to that part, I never felt a real connection between the two of them, you know?
Yeah, that part's a little up in the air. I mean, I don't know.
It's weird, you know, and he sacrifices himself, and you're just like, okay.
Like, yeah, you don't really get a relationship between him and her father either. Because, you know, even if you had that, it would tie in a little better, but...
Yeah, no.
Yeah, that, you know, again, that makes you wonder about script rewrites and where things stood to begin with. But, you know, I'm happy with the movie we got.
Yeah.
But, you know, our next episode of this podcast, we should do an updated breakdown of where the Star Wars films all sit, you know, what's our favorite, and kind of talk about where Rogue One sits alongside those other movies in our opinions. I think that would be a good topic, because I wonder that, and I kind of need to think about that. And
But I just feel, you know, a lot of people are, my thing is, like, I wish that there was more, not less. I think, like I said, this story needed a couple of films. It needed a little bit more breathing space. It needed a little bit more setup, you know, because the characters have a lot of they all have a lot of stuff going on, and we just don't know. And that's the brilliance of the original trilogy, is that by the time we reach Jedi, you know, we've had this full understanding of everybody's relationship and background and behavior and their pattern, you know, so everything has got a lot of value. Whereas this, you know, we just didn't get to that point.
See, in my opinion, I wouldn't want that. I think these Star Wars stories, my fear is that one of them eventually is going to turn into it's going to have sequels, and it's going to turn into its own side series. And I don't want that.
It will.
And I don't want that. I want the screenwriting to be a little tighter, that they don't need that, and that they're not as ambiguous with the relationships. Right. So, you know, they need, I think they kind of need to learn from this and tighten things.
At the end of the day, Disney's in the business of making money.
Clearly.
And they're going
remaking
to put out
all of their animated films live action.
Yep. And they're going to put out a movie every year. So they got a lot of space to fill, You know, you look at it now and you go, oh my God, there's going to be X amount of movies in the next few years. And you got to think that Disney's sitting there going, they're thinking about the next 10, 20 years. You know, and it's good and it's bad, because what made Star Wars films special, you know, was that two, three-year wait in between. And obviously the long hiatus between the original trilogy, the prequel, and now. And the question is with Star Wars coming out every 11 and a half months, you know, is it still going to maintain its specialness, you know?
No, it already isn't maintaining right. that specialness.
Yeah.
Already from Force Awakens to Rogue One, I've seen a dip in the excitement. Yeah. And the longevity. You know, Force Awakens, people are going back to see that over and over.
Yeah.
People were talking about it. People were picking up merchandise. I mean, it went on and on for months. Rogue One came out, people were excited about it, some people saw it a couple of times, and it's kind of fizzled out. I think it's a huge danger, and I worry that they're really going to water down Star Wars over the years, and it, you know, to them it's a product, and you'll feel that more and more as they put more movies out. And that, to me, is kind of a bummer. And, you know, my wife really feels strongly about that, to the point that she wouldn't even go see Rogue One because of that. She thinks that they're just watering down something that's great, and she doesn't want to ruin.
Well, I mean, you and I have talked extensively on the other podcast about the watering down of comic books.
Yep.
And sort of comic book fatigue, where, you know, we've seen roughly the same story with a slight variation so many times. And we're going to continue to do so in the next few years. I mean, when you really think about it, it's like when you look at the number of Marvel movies, just Marvel, we're not even talking about Fox or Sony or anything. It's a lot of movies now. I mean, it's a lot to go through. You know, it's deep.
It's deep, yeah.
You know, and it's a lot of work. You know, like I said, I told you this year when I went to Comic-Con that I started to feel like, man, being a geek now it's a lot of work.
Yep.
You know, there's a lot you got to watch and keep up with and read and, you know, play on video games and stuff like that. There's so many things all the time.
Well, even with Star Wars, I mean, this podcast, you know, we're bringing this podcast back essentially after a long break. And part of that is because, I don't know about you, but I couldn't keep up with everything. All of the 50 comics, the constant books that are coming out. You know, I read some of them. You know, Rebels, the video games, everything.
Yeah.
There's a lot, and it's hard to keep up with. And I feel like, you know, if I'm, you know, hosting a podcast about Star Wars, I should be up on everything. But nobody can be. It's impossible, or it's possible, but what kind of life is that?
I was going to say, it is possible.
It is possible.
It is possible, because there will be people who listen to this, or people out there who are like, well, I watch everything. I do everything. I've seen everything. You know, and it's true, and it is their whole life, you know?
Yep.
And that's why, like I said, the tough thing for Disney is that's what they're up against. You know, in a way, what benefited the original trilogy is at that time you didn't have... People have to understand that when the original Star Wars came out, okay, it played in theaters and it went away. There was no home video. There was no cable. There was no streaming. So Star Wars was like mythology. You're like, oh, man, you should go see Star Wars. Well, how do I go see it? Well, you can't. Yeah. You know, here's some pictures. It was awesome, you know? And the same thing for Empire. It wasn't until Jedi... I don't think it was until Jedi that all three films came out on VHS. It took a long time. They held back those. And I don't think that three of them came out in cable for a long time.
Yeah.
So there was no access to it. You know what I mean? You couldn't dissect it. The only way you could see it was to go to the theater.
Yep.
You know? Exactly. So, I mean, and, you know, that was for almost a decade. So when you think about it, for about five to eight years, the only way you could see any Star Wars film was in a theater, and that's the best way to see any of these movies. So people didn't get sick and tired of it. Like I said, it became mythology. You know, when we played with those toys in the early 1980s, we were using our imagination with those toys. Because it's not like today where my son's playing with a toy and the TV is playing that show in absolute constant rotation.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's a totally different world.
Yeah, no, it's completely different. And it affects everything. You know, it affects our ability to enjoy stuff. You know, the thing is, if this movie came out and you could only see it in theaters for the next 2 years, right? It would build up a better reputation because people couldn't pound it. You know what I mean?
Yep, I do.
You know? So I think that affects everything, too. And also, they just wouldn't make one of these a year because a company would go bankrupt.
Yeah.
You know, only Disney gets away with making this stuff once a year. You know, any other company would absolutely go bankrupt trying to make the $250 million movie every 11 months.
Well, you know, the real shitty thing, in my opinion, is that they're going to keep producing these until they no longer do well.
Right.
Because, you know, money is the bottom line. Obviously, right. It's a business. But, you know, this is... Star Wars is built up on, like you said, so much mythology and you know, your childhood. And that's why people are so rich into nostalgia these days, you know. So when something is being built up and built up and built up to the point where it's going to keep coming out until it fails, so they literally are setting it up for failure, that just bums me out, you know.
Well, it's an ATM machine, and they're going to withdraw until there's nothing left in the machine.
Yeah, and that's,
you know, that's how it is.
And at the end of the day, just like is happening with the superhero movies, we're just gonna be like, all right, it's getting old now, guys.
When George Lucas said that when he sold Star Wars, it was like selling into white slavery, it's because he understood that.
Yeah.
And, you know, for better or worse, we'll say this for George Lucas, is that he didn't make a lot of Star Wars because I think he understood as that's what made it special.
Yeah, I think you're right.
You know, I really think that's how he felt. Because let's face it, if he really was just money hungry like everybody says he was, then he would have put one out every year.
Exactly, and he would have made so much money.
Right, because he was making them literally in a garage with green walls.
Yep.
So, I mean, if after the prequels were done, if he wanted to just keep making movies, there was really nothing to stop him.
No.
You know? But I think he knew. I think he knew when he sold it to Disney that they were just going to crank him out. You know, and until... I mean, apparently he liked this movie. Someone, you know, I forgot which news agency said it, that he enjoyed this film. And I can understand why. I mean, I think it's a good film.
It's a good film. We're off to a good start.
Yeah.
I just worry that where we end up...
Well, like, you know, I said, we've been saying this about comic book movies now for, I think, for the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
You know, and...
Well,
and
it's gotten to the point, you know, we could look at comic book movies and point to a number of them every year now that we just have no interest in.
Right.
And then we can look at... there's only a couple that come out every year, if that, that are good and enjoyable.
Yeah. Well, it's like, you know, I had no interest in the Thor Ragnarok until they said that Doctor Strange was going to be a big part of it now, and I'm like, okay, now I want to see it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you never know. You never know. But I don't know. I just don't... I really did enjoy this movie, though. It sounds like we didn't, but we... we did.
Well, the thing is that, in a way, maybe it was good that we waited a couple of weeks, because, you know, we did get to stop and listen to the hullabaloo and... Yep. And you know, hear what everybody had to say, because I think if I had done a review, you know, that day or the next day, I would have just been like 110%, this is amazing, and maybe not have thought through some of the things that people did point out, you know. And then you can say, well, maybe people ruined it, to an extent, you know.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, when you go to see a movie, either you have a good time or you don't.
Exactly. You know, you know what? Also, you have to remember, like I said, there's those two different kinds of movies.
Right.
You know, there's the movie you do go to escape. Right. And when you leave that movie, if you can say that you were transported for 2 hours and you enjoyed yourself, then that movie did its job.
Job's done, yeah.
You know, then there's the other movies you go to, you know, to think and kind of think about the human nature and things like that. And those movies are great, too. But Star Wars is not that. It can have elements of it, But at the end of the day, it's not the kind of movie you go to for that. It's the kind of movie you go to enjoy, to have fun.
Yeah.
And I think this one did that. It really did that.
But like I said before, when you're a little kid and you're sitting around your living room with a half a dozen action figures, you're creating your own mythology.
Yep.
And nothing will ever be better than that mythology. Nothing will be more enjoyable than that. You know, and that's what Star Wars really had. You know, Star Wars allowed for people of a certain generation to sit in their living room and really create their own mythology of Star Wars, really enjoy it, you know, delve deep into it. And it had the benefit of not having a lot of clutter.
Yep.
Because when Star Wars came out, there really wasn't anything else for kids. You know, you go back and you go, until Richard Donner's Superman, there was no superhero major films, right? And when you look at, you know, big budget Hollywood films in the 1970s, I mean, that was really the only thing there was for kids. It wasn't until the cartoons of the 1980s that you got G.I. Joe and He-Man and Transformers and these other things that became, you know, huge cultural icons. But for a long time, Star Wars was alone.
Well, that said, did you take your son to see this movie?
No, and I'm not going to.
And I didn't take my kids. And here's the thing. Did you take your son to see Force Awakens?
Yes.
Yeah. So, again, to go back to that, it's not even a complaint. It's just this movie, like you said, it exists in a place that's for us, for the people who grew up with Star Wars, but it's not for that new generation who, as of last year, is kind of just being introduced to Star Wars.
Right.
So I think it's kind of bad timing. You know, maybe Disney didn't know what they had with Force Awakens.
But the thing is, if you're putting one out every 11 months, they don't care.
Well, also you have years of planning ahead of time, but
yeah, but the next one's already in the pipe.
Yeah.
So they're looking at it as, all right, you didn't like that one. Well, we'll be back next Christmas with Episode 8. It's going to have all the people you loved from 2 years ago.
So you have to think about it like this then. You're talking about being a kid and having to wait for these movies and playing with these toys. Well, we didn't bring our kids to this movie. So maybe every other year those movies are for us. And then the off years, those are the movies for our kids. So they still have to wait. So in that respect, it's, you know,
It works.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think kids are going to buy a lot of Rogue One figures.
Nope.
But then, you know, it's funny. I was in the store the other day and there was like a whole wall. I was at Toys R Us and there was a whole wall of Batman v Superman figures. And I'm sitting there going, I wonder if little kids walk in and look at that and go, Daddy, what's that movie?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know, it's like my son, you know, my son's six. He's going to be six in a couple weeks. And he's like, I want to see Deadpool. I'm like, you can't see Deadpool.
You can't see Deadpool. My daughter, who's
eight. Yeah, but I see Deadpool everywhere. And
my oldest daughter wants to see Suicide Squad so bad.
Right.
She loves that that Heathen song.
Yeah.
And she sees the music videos for it. And I'm like, I am not. You're not watching Suicide Squad.
Right.
No, it is not. You know, those movies are not for kids.
It's crazy.
Can you imagine
know?
Us at age eight being told we couldn't see Batman with Michael Keaton or something?
It's a totally different time.
Yeah, totally different.
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of crazy and unfair to them.
It is.
You know, and in a way, it's like, you know, you always want to do the mom thing where a mom should go to Hollywood and go, don't you kids have your own movies?
Yeah.
It's like, shouldn't you be watching adult movies with people worrying about things like death and taxes and all kinds of other stuff? You know, it's like, why are you still watching this stuff with the toys in it? And I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
I mean,
that is part of our problem. You know, I mean, but what do we do?
Yeah. Yeah, well, it all goes back to the nostalgia. It's all our fault.
Yeah. We
made this bed. Now we got to sleep in it.
Now we got to sleep in it. But and we are, you know, to some great extent being taken advantage of.
Oh, of course we are.
But at some point, it's up to us to disengage. You know, like I said, when I was at Comic-Con this year, I had that feeling. I was standing there in that ocean of toys and memorabilia. And I'm like, does any of this stuff really have any value?
You know, you're right. I mean, what you just said about, you know, disengaging. I've only just been feeling that same kind of idea that, you know, for a long time I was trying to keep up with everything. And now I'm starting to shed things and disengaging with things that I feel like I need to frenetically keep up with. And it feels great because you're focusing on the stuff that you're kind of figuring out what you actually really desire to see. And going after that stuff and leaving all the other shit on the side of the road. So it's a nice feeling. It really is. Maybe it's because we're getting old, but it is pretty great to not have to know everything that's going on and figure everything out.
Mm-hmm. No, it's true. I just, you know, like I said, I'm fine with this film. The Han Solo movie seems like a reach to me. I'm not sure about that one.
Well, then what, you know? Boba Fett after that?
Yeah. See, Boba Fett, I think, is fine.
Boba Fett will be great.
Because we know nothing.
Not many people know anything. Yeah.
Yeah. We know nothing about him.
I still really want that that live-action television show set in the Star Wars universe that has nothing to do with any core characters or storyline.
Right.
That's where they need to go. They need to stop tying everything in so tightly.
Well, the problem with that is the same problem that they have with Rebels, because that show exists in a context where we know the outcome of everything around it.
Yeah.
So it hurts that, because how do you create real drama and dramatic tension within that context if those characters are not allowed to touch the main overarching story?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And they've tried with Rebels, and the thing is with Rebels is when they do that, they kind of have to cheat. It's like Clone Wars. Like, when they keep bringing back Darth Maul, you know, they had like robotic Darth Maul and all this other stuff.
I think Rebels does a really good job, though.
They do a good job, but I think Clone Wars, the problem with Clone Wars was always that they were always kind of stealing from Peter to pay Paul.
Yeah.
You know, and it became this kind of mishmash, and the canon just got all wacky.
Well, what happens is it's a universe. I mean, it's the Star Wars universe. Yeah. So, I mean, I get how whatever's happening in the greater universe has some kind of effect on everything, but there's ways to tell stories without having to tie in those core characters.
Right.
You know, I want to see that happen.
But I think one good question, and I keep going back to Red Letter Media because I've watched a lot of their stuff on this, that they brought up is the Star Wars universe really that big? Because do we really accept Star Wars stories, or not? Maybe not me and you, but the society or the public as a whole accept Star Wars movies without the main characters and without the main context? You know what I mean?
It would be a hard sell.
Yeah, I mean, whereas you look at something like Star Trek, which has proven itself, for better or for worse, to be more durable with going outside of, even though, you know, granted we've gone back to the main characters again, but, you know, they've done a lot of great work outside of that original cast and characters. You know, they expanded their universe. There's a lot of different enemies.
I think you need familiar races, you know?
Yeah.
That's how Star Trek does it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
The thing is, like, Star Trek has proven, the universe of Star Trek, I'm probably pissing off Star Wars fans, but the universe of Star Trek really is a broader, more expansive universe to work with. It's just a lot more meat on the bone there. And maybe that's what they're trying to do with Star Wars now.
Maybe
is trying to pull that out, and that's what they're doing. You know, I was also kind of upset that they blew up Jedha, the Jedi city.
Yep.
Because I was like, I found that place fascinating.
It was pretty cool.
And it's the Jedi Jerusalem, right?
Well, it's like we need a little more of the Guardians of the Wills and all of that. That's a whole new lore that they introduced.
Right. Which goes back to Lucas's original concept.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, man, you know, I wish they had a... Yeah, the funny... My big thing with this film, like I said, I keep going back and saying, oh, I wish we had a little more of this or a little more of that, you know? I'm complaining about them making too many movies, but I'm sitting going, oh, no, I could have used a little... a little bit more of this.
Yeah.
You know, but it's true. It's I think there's a lot there, and I think they put together a pretty smart group of characters. I felt they were enjoyable. I felt they were interesting enough to get me through the film.
Yep.
You know, I liked them. You know, I didn't think anybody was ridiculous or out of place, or, you know, I wasn't rolling my eyes at any characters like I did in Force Awakens, in the prequels, you know?
Yeah. No, it was a great movie. So, yeah, I mean, overall, thumbs up for sure.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely.
Just, we'll see where things go in the future.
But I think we're safe. You know, I think episode 8 will be great. I think it'll be just fine. Oh, yeah. You know,
well, Ryan Johnson directing, you know, they're doing a good job mixing up the directors and writers and things like that. But at the end of the day, the producers have, you know, the say, you know. So we'll see where things go.
Well, that's why, I mean, these things are almost impossible to screw up now. You know, they think about it maybe too much. Like I said, the rewrites on this, you have to wonder if maybe they overthought this film a little too much.
Well, the ending shows that they did.
Yeah.
You know, the tying things together with a little bow.
Yeah.
You don't need to do that.
No, they're working too hard at it.
Yes, we get it. We totally understand going into this movie what the connections are. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, they just need to work on that a little bit in the next Star Wars story films.
Yeah.
And they will. I think they will.
But they will. Yeah. I mean, like I said, they're doing them constantly. So they can adjust. They're going to adjust on the fly.
Yep. They're listening to this podcast and taking notes.
Hey, you want to hear a funny story? I was, one of my students was doing a speech on Star Wars for speech class. And I talked to them about the fact that Pablo Hidalgo is my doppelganger.
Yeah.
And they were all laughing. I said, it's not a joke. I said, somebody Google him. And one of the kids screams out, oh, my God.
That's funny.
He brings it up on the he brought it up on the projector, and everybody was just rolling.
That poor guy, his job is literally keeping all of the canon together. He's the keeper of the book for all Star Wars official canon. Can you imagine?
No,
thank you. Too much.
That's a lot of work.
Too much. Yep. All right, well, I think this is a good place to end. I think our next episode, we definitely should do that kind of that list of where each film stands in our opinions. You know, what is the greatest Star Wars film? Where does Rogue One fit? I think that would be a really good topic. So I don't know when we're going to do it. Hopefully sooner rather than later. So stay tuned to that. Also, stay tuned and look for our Hey You Geeks podcast. We'll probably be back, if not next week, the week after, with a look at everything we're excited about in 2017. That's always a fun episode to do. And until then, I'm Tony Nunes.
And I'm Rick Rebello.
And this is the Dadawan Podcast.
1, 2, 3.
Production of the Geek Dad Podcast Network. If you've enjoyed this content, please consider supporting us at patreon.com/geekdad.